We're live, Mayor. Thank you very much. Good evening. I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of July the 5th, 2016. If I could ask Ms. Anderson to call the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Klopa?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda this evening is under honors and proclamations. It's item 5A, July 2016, as Park and Recreation Month proclamation. Deputy City Manager, Ms. Beard.
Thank you. Well, now that it's July 5th, we can officially start summer. And it's a good time to celebrate our park system and programs with a proclamation. And so Vice Chair of the Parks Board, Rosalie Wessels, will accept the proclamation along with Lynn Zwagstra, our brand new Parks and Community Services Director.
Thank you very much. And the Chair of the Parks Subcommittee on the Council, Ms. Klopa, is going to be helping me with this proclamation.
Proclamation of the City of Kirkland, designating July 2016 as Park and Recreation Month in the City of Kirkland, Washington. Whereas local park and recreation agencies are leaders in protecting our open space, connecting children to nature, and providing education and programs that engage communities in conservation. And whereas park and recreation departments lead the nation in improving the overall health and wellness of citizens and fighting obesity. And whereas the City of Kirkland Parks and Community Services Department's programs touch the lives of individuals, families, and groups, and positively impact the social, economic, health, and environmental quality of the community. And whereas park, recreation activities, and leisure experiences provide opportunities for young people to live, grow, and develop into contributing members of society and create lifelines and continued life experiences for older members of our community. And whereas the City of Kirkland's parks, natural areas, playgrounds, playfields, recreation programs, and community centers make Kirkland, Washington an attractive and desirable place to live and work and play and even visit while contributing to its ongoing quality of life and overall vitality. Whereas park and recreation programs increase a community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of the local tax base, increased tourism, the attraction and retention of businesses, and crime reduction. And whereas park and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect groundwater, prevent flooding, improve the quality of the air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, and produce habitat for wildlife. And whereas the Kirkland City Council recognizes the vital contributions of the City of Kirkland's dedicated park and recreation volunteers and employees, so now, therefore, Amy Wallen, the Mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim July as Park and Recreation Month and encourages all citizens to celebrate by participating in their choice of recreation and leisure activities with family, friends, and neighbors. Signed this 5th day of July, 2016. All right.
Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is item 6. Under communications, I'd like to add something under announcements, if it's okay with the council, to talk about July 4th and a little bit of a debrief about how we did. Everybody okay with that? Great. Ms. Beard. Okay.
Thank you. So it is July 5th, and that's the day after a really grand celebration that we had. And it was a great day. We did get some emails today from some folks about fireworks in Kirkland, and so I've asked Chief Harris and Chief Sanford to do a brief overview of their activity, police and fire activity for last night, calls for service, and what they were doing.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Chiefs. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. For the first time in
my career, I think it was the first time we had zero fire-related fire or injuries on the 4th of July with regard to the fire department. So that's a major milestone for all of us. what we did last night, we had three fire staffed vehicles who were all that were all marked. We patrolled the north end mainly, but went down into Houghton for about 5 hours from about 8 to midnight. And then we had two engines, one up, engine 25 in on Finn Hill and engine 27 in Kingsgate, went out looking for folks who were doing fireworks. Very little activity, what we saw. When you got close to the northern border, it got loud and lit up north of 145th, the whole distance from Kingsgate to Finn Hill. But by and large, it was folks were pretty compliant with the law, and the folks we did see were, they dispersed and put things away. It's kind of hard to sneak up on them in a fire engine, but so they would scatter.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it the patrols were pretty successful, and we saw a lot of compliance. So that's our report.
So, and from our perspective, as you know, 4th of July is a blackout day, so we require everyone to work. We don't allow anyone to have time off on the 4th of July. It was a very busy day. We had a total of 215 calls for service that encompass fireworks, quite a few domestic situations yesterday. As you know, you have the day off, and it's festive. We often also can see an increase in DV calls. There were 50 911 calls for fireworks. We did cite numerous people. Most of those were in North Juanita and Finn Hill area. One patrol officer told me this evening that he confiscated fireworks that were in excess of $600. The citizen had reported they were sure they were safe and sane, and but they had spent over $600, and they did receive a citation. We also had extra patrols, and we had two officers that were in unmarked cars. So they were in uniform, but they were in unmarked cars driving throughout the city. Most of that activity was between 9 and midnight, and they reported that by 1 o'clock it was pretty darn quiet in the city of Kirkland. Now, they could still hear things north and outside the city, but other than that, again, and we didn't have any issues. People thanked us when we gave citations. It was fairly compliant.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Sweet.
I have a question. Do we know if there were any fire-related treatments that went to Evergreen? I'm just wondering how the ER might have been.
Not that I'm aware of. The only incidents we had four very minor during the parade activities, the scraped knees, okay, things like that. But I don't believe there were any transports.
That's really good news. Okay.
Other questions or comments? Mr. Nixon, yes, please.
Yeah, you've seen the emails that we got earlier today, and most of the council members have seen them as well. And, of course, there's a difference of opinion on the level of activity, as you can tell from those. People were talking about Finn Hill being a war zone. And so do you think that's mostly north of the city limit that they're hearing that from or seeing that from, as opposed to in the center part of Finn Hill?
That's the only explanation I can come up with. I didn't see a single above the tree line firework when we were on patrol out there in south of 145th.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions or comments for our chiefs? Well, we had a great celebration, and I really appreciate all your hard work, and I really like the fact that we're being proactive and going out into neighborhoods. I think that's a important step that we've taken, and really appreciate all of our staff. I'm sure we'll talk about this during reports, but there were many of our staff out working the parade route, and it's pretty nice feeling to be part of a town that does things like that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for staying with us. The next item on our agenda is also under communications. It's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and up to 3 opponents may address the council. I do have a sign-in sheet, and the first person to have signed in is Linda Bach. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. I am Linda Bach, and I'm a volunteer with WAMIN, a group working to help overturn the Supreme Court's devastating Citizens United decision. To this end, last year, WAMIN collected slightly more than 330,000 signatures last year to put Initiative 735 on this year's November ballot. Initiative 735 urges the Washington State Congressional Delegation to propose a federal constitutional amendment which would clarify that, one, constitutional rights belong only to individuals, not corporations; two, that the spending of money is not free speech under the First Amendment; and three, that governments are fully empowered to regulate political contribution and expenditures to prevent undue influence, and these contributions and expenditures must be promptly disclosed to the public. A little over 3 years ago, the Kirkland City Council took a position on this matter and passed a resolution against Citizens United. I am here to ask the Kirkland City Council to adopt a resolution in support of Initiative 735. 17 states have already passed measures similar to Initiative 735, and nearly 800 municipalities throughout the United States have passed resolutions similar to Kirkland's. Why should our country adopt an amendment to overturn Citizens United, and why should Kirkland support Initiative 735? Very simply put, our country is in dire need of campaign finance reform. After this Supreme Court ruling, an unprecedented amount of money has flooded elections. Much of this money is funneled into campaign coffers from super PACs, which are not required to disclose the identity of donors. The wealthiest entities essentially have free rein to dominate elections, and equal opportunity in the political realm is slipping away. Average citizens have less and less ability to determine the policies which govern their lives. Indeed, special interest groups and average citizens want very different results from their elected officials. Voters of all persuasions oppose Citizens United. Before we can make significant progress on the pressing issues of our time, we must even out the playing field by reducing the influence of big money in our elections. As Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once said, we can have democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bach. Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is Joan Stevens. I think it's Joan Stevens. From Kingsgate? No. Okay. Well, I'll call her name again at the end, just in case she stepped out.
Mayor, I spoke with her, and I think she...
Oh.
I took her comments, and I think she did that in lieu of testifying.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Raymond. The next person to have signed in is Shannon Harris.
Good evening. I'm here. I live west of Market, and I've lived in Kirkland most of my life, but in the downtown area for about 32 years. And I'm here because I'm really concerned about crime. I think that there's a lot of things going on that maybe we're not hearing about. I work with police through my job at my homes at different locations within the neighborhoods I've lived in, and 3 years ago I moved to West to Market, and we have been burglarized. A year ago we've had petty crime, And I know there's a lot of things going on that are drug related, but I'm concerned about these groups of men that are going around in broad daylight, like with my house a year ago, and neighbors were home and they were kind of dressed up like, you know, maybe workers or something, and they cleaned us out. And I know this is happening more and more, and I know there's an undercurrent of people right now in a positive light that want to work with Mrs. Harris, Captain Harris, and to work with the police to better our neighborhoods. Because right now, from my opinion as a parent and someone who's lived here for a long time, I think the crime in our area has increased immensely. I don't have any numbers or statistics to quote, but I'm concerned about it. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is right before 4th of July, we had two incidents right in the same night where the car was stolen. They figured out how to get into a new car and took that car away, tried to break into the house. Another one with an alarm system, they got into the car, figured out how to get into their car, took their clicker, got into the garage, but it was a separate unit, so they couldn't get into the rest of the house. I had multiple calls from people, hey, did you have issues? Did you hear about this? There's all kinds of emails going across the neighborhoods, and there's a bunch of women that want to get together, and we want to work with the police department and with you folks to improve some of the things that have gone on. And I just feel that I have been involved with the police. I have had a good relationship with the police department at our school at Mark Twain, where we've had lots of issues with traffic and crossing, to the issues at the high school several years ago and the drug trafficking across the freeway and in Everest Park. And we thought, wow, we've moved to a good neighborhood, and we didn't have any issues in any of our other neighborhoods, and now we've had three just with us and now on our street several. So I'm asking the council to communicate what the police department is going to do. I know that Captain Sherry Harris had commented in a document that she wanted to address traffic and crime. I kind of would like to see crime and then traffic, because traffic's a huge mess, and that's so much more complicated in some ways. Not that the crime is any easier, but it would be nice to know in detail and in great communication what you are doing, because a lot of people don't feel safe here anymore. I love Kirkland, and I want my Kirkland back. So thank you for listening to me, and you all have a good rest of the week.
Thank you. This is a deeper conversation. I wonder if we could have you check in with Chief Harris, and she'll make sure that you're connected with the chair of the Public Safety Committee, because I think our committee will want to have a deeper conversation with you about your concerns. Thank you. So I've reached the end of the sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Seeing none, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. And we'll move on to the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'll call on Councilmember Marcioni, the Chair of Finance and Administration Committee, for an audit of the accounts.
Hey, we had a payroll of $3,189,581.14 and bills of $3,036,878.73.
Yes, sir. Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd move first and final reading of the consent calendar.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Marcioni to approve the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Thank you very much. There's an ordinance, so it asks for the roll, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Kloba?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marcioni?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved. The next item on our agenda is item 10, unfinished business. It's the 2016 King County Surface Water Design Manual update. Ms. Beard.
Thank you. This item was continued from the June 21st meeting. We needed some more time for it. You might note that the staff report that was in this packet was the same staff report that was in the previous packet, and so it didn't reflect any conversation that you would have had at your last meeting. The staff anticipates coming back and checking in a few times before adoption of this and the critical areas ordinance. Kathy Brown, Public Works Director, is here to do a presentation on surface water design regulations.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Mayor and Deputy Mayor and Council members. I'm here to give you a quick sort of Reader's Digest edition of our planned update to our surface water design manual. And before launching into it, I'd like to give credit where credit is due to our surface water management section, Jenny Gauss and Kelly Jones, who's in the audience today for any technical questions. And Jenny would be giving this presentation, but she's out of town today. But she really has been the one behind the update. So we are required by the Department of Ecology to update our stormwater regulations every 5 years. And the current update is due at the end of this year. Many jurisdictions, there are about 94 jurisdictions in Western Washington that are required to do this update. And it's a requirement under the state's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, or NPDES permit. And the NPDES permit is the state's way of implementing the Federal Clean Water Act. So this is a big deal, and it's something that isn't very discretionary for the city. What is at our discretion is how we go about updating the manual, and we have a recommended approach that I'd like to hear a little feedback from you on. So first of all, why is the state requiring the update? There has been a lot of ongoing research over the last couple of decades on stormwater and its impacts on salmon habitat and our environment in general. And some of the recent research has shown that stormwater is a huge source of pollution in Puget Sound. Untreated, it is toxic to fish. And particularly in King County, there have been a lot of stream habitat studies that show that even small flows can be very damaging to stream habitat. So it's new research that's driving the regulations. One of the big changes, and this again is part of the recent research in this area, is a requirement for low-impact development, or LID. And I apologize for the many acronyms, and let me know if I slip into them too frequently. But low-impact development is basically a concept where you run stormwater through soil, and it filters the pollutants out before it reaches a stream. The LID program complements many of the other programs that we've already implemented in the city of Kirkland, such as spill response and stream habitat restoration, maintenance, development, retrofitting, and public outreach. As I mentioned, we have a couple of choices on how we go about updating our stormwater requirements. And all of the jurisdictions in Western Washington are looking at these options. Some jurisdictions that were under what's called the Phase 1 NPDES permit have already done these updates. We're part of Phase 2. And both the Phase 1 and Phase 2 jurisdictions, some of them are adopting an existing manual that's known as the Ecology Manual. It's a manual that Department of Ecology adopted in 2012 and updated in 2014. And there are pros and cons to that manual. It's rather prescriptive, but it's a simpler way to move ahead. The King County Manual provides sort of an a la carte approach to stormwater design, and it's pretty well known in this area, so developers are familiar with it and prefer sticking with the King County Manual. And then we could kind of go off on our own and adopt the minimum requirements in the Ecology Manual and come up with our own sort of technical notebook. Some jurisdictions, like the city of Bellevue, are doing this. On a preliminary basis, we're recommending that we move ahead and adopt the King County Stormwater Manual. The city already uses the 2009 King County Manual. As I mentioned, it's preferred by our development community. It's already been approved by Department of Ecology. And King County has done a lot of public outreach, and they have a lot of support to jurisdictions that adopt their manual, so that's really helpful. What we're taking a look at, though, over the next few months is that certainty that comes with the King County Manual versus could we do something that's a little more flexible, maybe a little more streamlined, maybe less expensive. I haven't seen another jurisdiction that has successfully done this, but we do want to make sure that we're doing the very best for the city of Kirkland. Major changes. I mentioned the low-impact development changes. But the really big deal with this manual is its impact on smaller projects, projects that were previously exempt or didn't meet the threshold for stormwater requirements, now will be required to do some stormwater facilities. And this will particularly impact the city's capital improvement program. Additionally, the updated requirements require, these new facilities, the low-impact development facilities, that both the city itself and private property owners will have to maintain over time. So there's an upfront cost that will be reflected in the CIP, but there will also be an ongoing maintenance cost. So, again, the largest impact is to the medium-sized or smaller projects in both the capital and private side. An example, a really good example, is the 6th Street sidewalk, and you've seen the sidewalk work that we've done in downtown Kirkland on 6th Street. It's creating new impervious surface, and it's also replacing existing impervious surface. And both of those trigger LID requirements. So not to dive into the details of the design, but just looking at construction cost only, and these are rough preliminary estimates, but it's based on studies that have been done in Western Washington, the cost increase to that particular project would range from 35% to 68%. That's construction cost only. That doesn't include any study work that would have to be done in advance, and it doesn't include ongoing maintenance. It doesn't include design reviews. So this is a big deal for the CIP. I want to make sure to emphasize that it's a big deal in two ways. The city has an opportunity to do a lot of good for water quality with the many projects that we do of this scale, but in terms of our transportation and park CIP, it will take some relooking at those projects, rescheduling of those projects, and figuring out how to keep the level of service that, you know, we've aspired to over the years and still comply with the requirements. The maintenance impacts are a little harder to get our arms around. LID is still a relatively new concept. But these new facilities need to be maintained. Some of them involve plantings that need to be maintained and cared for. Some of them involve filter systems that need to be replaced. And even in situations where you're talking about infiltration, say through pervious pavement or through some of these types of facilities that we have on Park Lane, over time, how well the infiltration is working and what level of toxicity, you know, gets into that system, it's going to have to be monitored and dealt with over time. I don't have a cost impact yet for the maintenance side. We're working on it, and it's new in the region, so there aren't really standards to draw from. As we mentioned at the last council meeting in the study session, the NPDES permit requirement updates are very tightly interrelated with our updates to the critical areas ordinance, and so we'll be working on making sure that those two complement one another rather than conflict. We have done some outreach. We've spoken to the Parks, Public Works, and Human Services Committee. Our internal CIP steering committee. There was an open house for the community. Wasn't a lot of community interest, so that might be something we revisit as time goes on. There was an open house for developers that was well attended, but they are more in tune to this kind of thing and are very familiar, as I mentioned, with the King County manual. So that was sort of the auctioneer's version. There's a lot more depth and detail that goes along with this, And, of course, the devil's in the details, and I'd be happy to follow up with any questions later. We are planning on doing another briefing before the council, and guessing that the Parks, Public Works, and Human Services Committee might want another briefing, too. We will be planning to return to the council in fall with the code changes and the changes to the design manual. Prior to doing that, what I've asked my staff to do is take a couple of projects that we're all familiar with, a parks project and maybe a sidewalk project, and run it through the process using all three of the options that I described, so we can get a really good feel on, you know, how quick would the process be, what would the requirements be, what would the cost be, and that will help us decide which path to take. And then similarly, a development project that we're all familiar with and how that would run through the process. We will likely be making requests to the 2017-18 budget. There are impacts to development review, to the capital improvement program, and to maintenance and operations. And like I said, we don't have a good handle on the maintenance and operations impacts yet, so we'll see how that goes. Again, the NPDES permit requires that these new regulations be effective January 1st of 2017. And we're using this time period, and we'll really focus in the fall on coming up with some pre-approved plans that will help developers and our own capital project managers to design projects that comply. And we'll look at more training. And my hope is that we can come up with regulations and rules and processes that will encourage flexibility and focus on outcome. There's a danger in this kind of update in just prescribing one size fits all and building stuff that doesn't always work on a specific site. And so we want to make sure that what we are requiring developers to build and what we build ourselves really will work on the sites that are impacted. So that's going to take a little bit of extra emphasis on outcome. So any questions or comments?
Questions or comments? Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think what we're moving into is an area that's going to require a much more emphasis on life cycle costs. The initial construction is just one piece of it, and so I hope that we robustly incorporate life cycle cost estimates. And as you said, we're learning as we go, so it's our best estimate at the time, but incorporating the life cycle costs of alternatives rather than just the upfront costs.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. And the conundrum that we're in right now is the updated codes are required in January, and some of these facility designs are really new. So we will do our best guess at life cycle costs, but I just caveat that they'll be refined over time.
Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. One question and one comment. First, you mentioned that the permit requires us to have new regulations in place by the end of the year. When we looked at critical areas regulations last meeting, we also talked about potentially sliding the effectiveness date of that into February, given some end of the year crunch. And I'm a little concerned about saying we're creating a matrix here that says new stormwater manual, but old critical areas regulations. And I'm wondering if we could take a look at both of those and look at pros and cons, and maybe we want to move that critical areas deadline up to keep things in sync.
Yeah, we can do that. I think what's most important is that as both of these regulations move forward, that we're cross-checking and making sure that we're not creating rules that are contradictory or confusing. And I will work with the planning department on that. I think it's quite feasible to have two different implementation dates as long as we do our homework in advance. I definitely wouldn't recommend pushing back the date on the stormwater manual since it is a permit requirement, but we'll take a look at the pros and cons of the of moving the critical areas up or having them at two different dates.
Okay, thank you. And then one comment. You mentioned that this is a big deal regarding development and maintenance and operations. I do want to make a comment on the big goals that we're pursuing here, on, especially on protecting salmon. Last year, when I was representing Kirkland on the Cedar River Lake Washington Salmon Recovery Council, RIA 8, now that Councilmember Kloba represents us, but last year there was a briefing on the science and research on this, and it was very striking where they reviewed the impacts of stormwater that they actually sampled from the 520 bridge and showed the impacts on living salmon and the impacts on their genetics, and then looked at different combinations, diluted stormwater and different stormwater treatments, including LID. And part of why we're here is that the stormwater treated by LID techniques was the one that had basically no impact, no discernible impact compared to the control group. And so there is very strong science on why we need to do this to protect salmon, which are an endangered species.
Absolutely. And you know, some of those studies are just fascinating. And I do have an abbreviated video that I can share with you. There wasn't enough time here, but for anyone who's interested on the results of the studies that Councilmember Arnold is talking about, there's been some excellent science done. So, you know, the regulations are here for a good reason, and we do have an opportunity to do a lot of good, but it does cost money, and I don't want anybody to be surprised when this comes with a price tag.
Other comments for Kathy? Yeah, I have one. Oh, go ahead.
If I might, just yes. One add-on to what Deputy Mayor Arnold said. It started out with the term zero impact development, and Kirkland was one of the leaders in the early days of working that in and working the consideration in, of the science too. Thank you.
I wanted to just follow up with what you were saying, Kathy, and that's that we don't want anyone to be surprised. And this is the kind of thing where not everyone is always totally engaged around this, and it is a big deal, and that means that every, you know, we're stretched to invest in infrastructure now, and not just Kirkland, not just the state of Washington, but the whole country. It's where is our infrastructure and why aren't we investing in it? And we're talking about huge increases in the cost of our infrastructure for very good reasons and with very good, backed by very good science and by governments higher than us requiring us to do so. But I think that public information piece is huge because we're not going to have the money that we had. We're not going to be able to buy as many things because we're not going to have as much money because the things we want to buy are going to be more expensive. So I hope that we'll get out there as much as we can with this information. It's a big deal, as you said.
It is. And you know, I have been involved in implementation of new environmental regulations over the years in past jobs, and there are ways to come up with win-win situations where you can meet multiple requirements with one facility, or where you can solve a roadway problem and a stream problem at the same time. But that's where the flexibility and innovation comes in, and it's an important mindset as we implement things. But even with all those optimistic approaches, it will cost more. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thanks.
The next item on our agenda is also under unfinished business. It's item 10B, Ordinance 4520, relating to land use. Ms. Beard.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance was also continued from the June 21st meeting so that we can add clarifying language about the impact of siting electrical facilities near certain types of businesses. So there was a section added to the zoning code, the proposed zoning code, that allow us to take into consideration mitigating technologies related to interference with existing high technology firms. So staff, planning staff is here, as well as staff from the Puget Sound Energy, because this is a very technical area for us. And if you have any questions about that, but we, if you like a staff presentation, we could do that too.
Do we need a staff presentation, or do I have a motion to approve the ordinance? Mr. Arnold.
Madam Mayor, I
do you approve?
I move to approve ordinance 4520 in its summary relating to zoning and land use and amending the following chapters of Kirkwood's zoning ordinance 3719 as amended 515 and 117 and approving a summary ordinance for publication. File CAN 15-0045.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve ordinance 4520. Is there any discussion? Mr. Arnold.
Madam Mayor, while this telecommunications utilities update is usually a non-controversial housekeeping issue, we do have an issue. We did have an issue with a Kirkland business that is impacted by electrical interference from transmission line siting. And as staff had evaluated permitting applications for these new transmission lines, our current decision-making criteria includes a number of environmental and siting issues, but not necessary language to consider that business impact. This amendment would help change that. I spoke to the CEO of Silicon Designs, the Totem Lake business that's having an issue. He was not able to be here tonight, but appreciates our work to make this a consideration.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your work on this, sir. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. One thing I wanted to call attention to is many of you have received emails from Sense, which is the group that's opposed to the Puget Sound Energy East Side Project, Energize East Side Project. One of the claims that they've been making is that Kirkland requires a 500-foot separation between hazardous material pipelines like the one we have along the eastern edge of the city, and any essential public facility, including utilities, and claiming that this would mean that Puget Sound Energy would not be able to put electrical transmission lines in the existing pipeline core. There's been a disagreement over whether that actually applied. And this ordinance does include a clarification that says so long as the...
Mr. Nixon, your microphone.
It won't turn on.
Uh-oh.
Ah, there it turned on.
Thank you.
Okay. I had it too close to me, apparently. So did you hear what... You heard what I said so far. Mm-hmm. On e-page 53, this ordinance does include a clarification that says that utilities that provide system redundancies so that lifeline functions are not curtailed for a critical period of time are not considered high-consequence land uses. And since the Energize East Side project would include redundant paths to bring power, and it would not be a single high-risk transmission line, then that means that this concern that's been raised would not actually exist. So I am supportive of the Energize East Side project and appreciate the fact that we've got this language included in here.
Thank you very much. Other comments? Thank you. The question is on the motion to approve Ordinance 4520. It was moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Kloba?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4520 is approved. The next item on our agenda is under new business. We're moving right along to 11A. It's Ordinance 4523 relating to cost recovery and application procedures for small special events. City Manager. Deputy City Manager.
Thank you. I just got
Ms. Beard.
This item is not carried over from June 21st. This is actually a new item. This amendment is to amend the special event ordinance. It has three components. One, it separates the permit and the application fee from the permit fee for events. It clarifies that a small event is defined as involving 100 people or less and with minimal or no impacts to the venue where it's at. And it exempts small events from being subject to the limitation of 2 events per month at the same venue. So this would exempt the small events from the permit fee. They'd still do the application and still check in. And just wanted to, got a couple questions about this today, about this doesn't affect sort of spontaneous events or, holding up political signs on the corner, a walk that it is taking place on the sidewalks, a candlelight vigil on a corner that doesn't otherwise close a street or interfere with anything and is not at all an issue. It does not, we don't regulate expressive events provided that they, obey the laws that, without causing too much of an impact. And so this amendment was reviewed by the Planning and Economic Development Committee. We do have, if you like, a presentation.
Madam Mayor.
Or we can answer questions.
Yes, sir. Mr. Asher.
Great presentation. I'd like to move Ordinance 4523 relating to cost recovery and application procedures for small special events and amending portions of the Kirkland Municipal Code.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve Ordinance 4523. Discussion, Mr. Nixon.
Yes, thank you. Just to add to what Marilyn said, I was contacted by Kirkland Interfaith Network and by FIRE, Fostering Interfaith Relationships on the East Side, who sponsor like an annual hunger walk in the first case and occasional candlelight peace vigils, concerned about even the $50 application fee and the impact that it might have on their budget. In the case of FIRE, there's not even a bank account, so it's an issue. And sought clarification from the staff, and it does seem that both of those type of events that they typically have would fall under the expressive activity section of the code, which is not addressed here. It's 19.24.220. And so generally no applications would be needed. But that doesn't mean that the city doesn't want to know about these things happening. We prefer the police not be surprised by a gathering of people. And so what we've been talking about is potentially having a way to notify the city, not apply for a permit, but notify the city of the intent to have one of these spontaneous gatherings. And, date, time, place, how many people are expected, those sorts of very basic things. And that way, at least the city could notify the organizer if there was some conflicting other organization or whatever that had already talked about having something at that location. And so we haven't nailed down exactly what that would be. It could be a web form on the website or just a well-known email address, but it needs to be something that people would see and respond to after hours, because some of these spontaneous things happen on very short notice. And so I don't know if we want to refer that to a committee or just ask the staff to bring back a recommendation on what's the best way to handle these notifications of these expressive events.
I think we should probably come back with some ideas about how to handle that. Mm-hmm. We can do that.
Sounds good.
Yes.
So we still want to move ahead with passing this ordinance. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an issue that has been around for a while anyway, mm-hmm. that there's mm-hmm. not a clear way to contact the city on a weekend and let the police know, oh, by the way, we're going to have a candlelight vigil at this corner tomorrow night. And it would be nice to be able to do that, just so they're aware.
Why don't we discuss that at the Parks, Public Works, and Human Services rather
Since
than try to do it?
Planning Economic Development has
group group here, too.
No.
Yes. Take it to Planning and Economic Development, or?
Because that's where the whole overall issue has been before, because they handle events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that all right?
It's all right with you?
Very good.
Will do.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion before we take action? Okay. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve for Ordinance 4523. The roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Klobuchar?
Aye.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Aye.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4523 is approved. The next item under new business is 11B. It's Ordinance 4524 relating to modifications to Title 21 of the Kirkland Municipal Code regarding building and construction. Deputy City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Every 3 years, we're required to update our codes to conform to the international and state codes. And the amendments, most of these are required of us. Some we don't have any discretion on. Some we do have some discretion on. Staff is recommending adoption of all of the amendments with one exception, and that is the solar-ready provision, which was discussed with at the Planning and Economic Development Committee. The committee asked the staff to go check in with the master builders on that. Master builders expressed some concern, and so it's staff's intent to bring it back to the next PED meeting to let you know about what the master builders recommended. So that's the only thing that's not being taken up tonight. And we did get a few questions today on this, and we can maybe run through those questions if you like, do a presentation, or just answer questions as you have them.
Questions?
So, as always, you know, stakeholder input is very important, so it's good that we got from the master builders. Have we also reached out to our solar community and our solar providers and people interested in solar as far as what they were thinking about these proposals or not?
We haven't specifically reached out to them. We've been working with them on a number of other venues with the Solarize Kirkland, and we know where they are, and we know, I think, where the council is and where the city is. We want to promote it. We don't necessarily want to regulate it or make it mandatory, but that's the sense we're getting. But we're going to come back to the PED and discuss it further. But the solar industry itself is, you know, very supportive of the appendix, which is an optional appendix in the building code.
So we're not necessarily leaning that direction. We're leaning towards the master builders.
No, I think we are just going to go back to the next planning and economic development committee and just report back what we found with how the master builders are, and then we'll go from there. I think we have some proposals, and we just want to debrief the PED committee on what we learned from the master builders.
But we're not proposing anything.
It's just that it didn't have to be done right now, so we're recommending waiting until the next PED meeting to decide whether or not we want to go forward.
Okay. I would really hope that we do the exact same outreach that we did to the master builders out to the solar community in a very specific fashion.
Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to make sure that we, as a council, have this item come back to us also, not just to the Public Works and Economic Development Committee.
Mr. Arnold.
Yes, and the Planning and Economic Development Committee did not make any recommendation on this. We just said that there had been no outreach on this. We recognized that there needed to be some more before we took a look at it, and this would be something that we'll make a recommendation on before it comes to council.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Asher.
Thank you. One item that I would hope that we can look at how we work on over the longer term is the separation of the residential building living envelope with the fire threat from garages. Since we've decided we're not going to do sprinklers, the The standards were weakened when we went from the National Building Code to the International Building Code, and I'm not sure how we would work that for both the doors and the walls between that are separating garages and the living areas. So maybe someone can come back with some solutions as to approaches that we might take over the longer term to sort of reinforce that, because the current standards are assuming that there are sprinklers in the at least in the living quarters.
If I could speak to that real quickly, we aren't allowed to on our own make the IRC more stringent, but we can go back to the State Building Code Council and try to get a statewide change to the code that could affect that. So we would certainly take that approach.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate your presentation. So the next item on our agenda is City Council reports.
We haven't had a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you, sir.
If you'd like, Madam Mayor, I'd like to move Ordinance 4524 relating to modification to Title 21 of the Kirkland Municipal Code regarding building and construction.
Second.
Thank you. Apologize for that, Council. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Nixon to approve Ordinance 4524. Is there any further discussion?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you. In reading through all of this, there was only one section that kind of popped out at me that I had a concern about, and that's, if you're looking at it in your packet, Section 61 of the ordinance starts on, it's on E-page 113, is that right? Yeah, E-page 113, starting at line 1438. And this has to do with maintenance drains for fire sprinkler systems. And basically, to meet the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System requirements, systems have to be designed so that those, so a fire sprinkler maintenance drain drains to the sanitary sewer system and not to the stormwater system, because we want to minimize the amount of chlorinated water that goes directly into the stormwater system. What was not clear to me when I read this was, does this apply to residential single-family sprinkler systems? Are they required to have these maintenance drains, et cetera, et cetera? And in going back and forth with staff a couple times, what we determined is most modern residential single and two-family structure sprinkler systems use flow-through. They don't have separate maintenance drains because their water is pretty much being continuously circulated, because the end of each sprinkler run has to be at a fixture that's used frequently, like a toilet or something. And also, the amount of water that's contained in these systems is small, like maybe 50 gallons at most, and that the impact of releasing that much water, say, out in your yard, if it needed to go out in the yard, is not nowhere near as great as the thousands of gallons you might have in a multifamily, commercial, industrial sprinkler system. And so I asked, well, could we create an exception to this maintenance drain requirement, or just to make it clear that this requirement did not specifically apply to single and two-family residences. And I had the staff draft an amendment to that effect. I don't know, did everybody get a copy of this, or do I have the only copy now, or could we put it up on the screen?
I saw it. No, and I don't have it on the screen.
Okay.
So
I could forward the email to everybody if you wanted to see it real quick.
Yeah, it's a... May I say, it's a adding one sentence to that one section, clarifying.
Yeah, so at the end of the section, it would add.
Which section? What line?
It would be after the current existing line 1446.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of that section 61.
Okay.
And it says, exception, this requirement does not apply to systems installed in one- and two-family dwellings and townhouses.
It sounds like an amendment to the motion.
Yes.
Yes. Well, so I would
second that amendment.
I would move that the amendment be adopted.
Second.
Thank you for making that easy for me. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Asher to adopt the amendment as proposed by Mr. Nixon to accept one- and two-family dwellings.
Does the staff have any comment?
Staff comment? Are we okay with this? We're okay with this? I'm seeing head nods. Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. The amendment is approved. Any further discussion before we vote on the main? All right, the main motion then, moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Nixon to approve Ordinance 4524 as amended. If we could have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Clova?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Walling?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4524 as amended is approved. Now we're going to move on to City Council reports. Do we have any reports from council members about all of our committee minutes are now posted online, but if there's anything specific you'd like to draw our attention to, now would be a good time for that. Yes, sir, Mr. Nixon.
Thanks. Just on tourism, I just wanted to remind everyone that the application period for tourism event grants is still open. It's open through August 10th. There is a workshop for applicants, prospective applicants, on July 18th, which is coming up soon. So if you know anyone who's thinking about having an event who would like to access city tourism money to help support it, they should contact Philly Hoshko or tourism@kirklandwa.gov, and we'll get them set up.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir, Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, do we want to talk about topics that we would like to, for committees to discuss at this particular point, or you want it later?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah. There was one comment that the deputy city manager made that doesn't ring quite true. Earlier this evening, we were talking about, we were talking with Michael about it before the meeting. I've received some requests from the Citizens Climate Lobby that they've been given access to the Friday market, and then this year they've been stopped from having access to the Friday market and now being asked to stay off of the grounds, which sort of surprised me, in trying to get people to lobby their Congress members for a carbon reduction, and it essentially is an approach to reduce carbon. I'd like for us to maybe take that up in the Parks and Public Works Committee just to talk about that, you know, whether we want that limitation or not, or what kind of limitation we really want.
Mm-hmm. Is everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah, me too.
So, yes, please.
Thank you.
All right, regional reports. Mr. Nixon.
Well, thank you. Just a couple of things. We had the Association of Washington Cities annual conference in Everett, first to the 24th. And I attended several sessions. Two items of interest. Number one, our city clerk is still the best in the state.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she did a marvelous job talking about best practices for handling public records requests. And with a little help from another city clerk. But the most interesting session I attended had to do with the recently expanded and updated state Department of Revenue business license system. And essentially what they do is allow people to apply for a city business license at the same time and on the same website as all of the other state licenses they have to have. Cities can participate in this. There's no cost to the city to do it. There's no additional cost to the applicant to to do it if they do the city license at the same time as their state licenses. They remit revenue a couple times a week, so there's not really any delay in it. And they recently, just in the last year, added the ability to handle head taxes like ours, including many variations on the theme of head taxes. So I provided that information to the finance department, and they're going to look into it and hopefully at some point give us a report back on whether that's something that will be interesting to us.
So I have a question about that. Before, when they were talking about that, there was going to be an administration fee taken off the top. Is that now
significant
gone?
Significant administration
yes,
fee.
That's why we turned it down before.
At the presentation, they said that there's no reduction in the revenue that the city receives between using the state system and the system that we currently use. The state has switched over, I guess, to charging an application fee on the top, which is $19 for the first year and $11 for renewals. But you pay that same amount regardless of how many different licenses you apply for. And since people have to pay that for the state licenses anyway, they can check the box and say they want their city license too, and it doesn't increase the fee at all. So the city gets 100%, at least the way I understood the presentation is the city gets 100% of the revenue that they
would
otherwise get.
And there's a sharing of data both ways, not
yes.
just, that's the important
thing. Yeah, there's a portal for the cities where they can go in and manage the system. And cool. You know, it's not like the state automatically issues a city business mm-hmm. license. The applicant fills out the information. The city gets a notification that the application has been made. It can be reviewed by city staff. Any required planning reviews or whatever can be done. And then only when the city is comfortable issuing the license do they flag it in the state system. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth looking into, at least from the perspective of, you know, could it potentially save us some internal costs of processing business licenses?
Ms. Dunlap.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. We participated in the Department of Licensing and Department of Revenue joint meetings 2 or 3 years ago when they were planning for this, when they were looking at merging it. And particularly Redmond and ourselves laid out a number of things that they were not planning to address. And so the finance department is going to go back and look and see if they truly have. A lot of it has to do with timing and some of the issues like that in terms of when the renewals occur. But if they have done all of those things that you summarized, I think it's something that we'd be interested in. Again, we've participated for a number of years in the discussions of why this would be a good idea, but their ability to be as flexible as we all wanted them to be was always a concern. The only other thing I wanted to add is that Bellevue, Seattle, and two other jurisdictions have built a separate portal that they're using, and so that gives me a little bit of pause to say, so why the separate portal if it's addressing the universal needs? But we will bring it back. And I think my suggestion would be maybe bring it back to the Finance and Administration mm-hmm. Committee mm-hmm. as a
you're okay with that?
Follow-up.
Yeah,
on
if we could
that'd be great.
Put that on their topic list.
Yeah.
And there's not a rush because apparently they have a one-year backlog of new cities to onboard already. They can only onboard a new city about one a month. So just a
one
couple.
A month?
One a month is what they're saying.
Doesn't sound very efficient.
Well, but they only charge an $11.
No, it's,
okay.
It's free.
I wanted to say that I greatly enjoyed the 4th of July celebration once again. So congratulations to Councilmember Sweet and her team for another job well done.
Yes.
And then a couple of future things. One is to remind everyone that the dedication of the Waverly Park improvements is coming up this coming Monday at 6 p.m. And hopefully everyone's aware of that. And the next Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee meeting is a week from tomorrow, just the 13th. Haven't seen even a draft agenda yet, but of course, as soon as we get it, we'll forward it and highlight any items of interest. That's it.
Thank you. Ms. Clova. Yes, and I... Oh, good, it is still on. I think you summarized the one I didn't get to participate, but I certainly heard our fireworks, and it was... I know they were enjoyed by many, many people from all around. So thank you for all the work that you and your committee do.
Nothing to add.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Thank you. The Mental Illness Drug Dependency Committee is still continuing to work on the renewal, and they are still continuing to have a 10-year and doing much evaluation of outcomes. I'm my best bet in trying to get that inserted maybe during the Regional Policy Committee or during the County Council their consideration to have some monies reserved for evaluation of outcomes. It appears that in a committee that is generally populated by providers of service, that the success criteria is the providers have been funded. And that's, I think it needs to be evaluated a little bit more closely. So we'll see. I'm going to try to meet with Councilmember Jeannie Cole Wells and see if we can get something evaluated somewhere along the line. It would be nice. We're doing a lot of good things. There's no doubt about that. But whether we're using the marginal dollar for the best marginal outcome, there's no way to tell right now.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I've heard a lot about your work on that committee, and it's well known.
I wish I could be more successful.
Well, they definitely respect your perspective, though. Ms. Marcioni. Ms. Sweet. Mr. Arnold.
I have a couple things. On June 23rd, Sound Transit voted to put the ST3 package on the November ballot. ST3 will include light rail to South Kirkland, bus rapid transit to Totem Lake with a station at 85th, and bus lanes connecting the Kirkland Transit Center downtown. ST3 does not build transit on the Cross Kirkland corridor, but rather continues the conversation and study into the future, looking at future transportation options both on and off the corridor. Let's see. Also on the Association of Washington Cities Conference, Councilmember Nixon and I attended the Jurassic Parliament breakout. If you have not seen Ann McFarland do that, it's well recommended. One interesting thing that we might want to consider in our procedure was an option that was discussed about when we discuss for big issues. When we go kind of down the table where everybody gets a chance to speak, a slight twist where you have the opportunity to speak on the main motion to get some context before you look at any amendments. That may be something that we might find useful or might consider looking at in the future. According to Ms. McFarland, it would just be a simple motion to say, to allow brief discussion on the main motion before amendments are considered. Might be interesting. Finally, on June 29th, I attended the workshop on wildlife and the urban environment that our deputy city manager, our director of intergovernment relations, and folks from USDA put on, and it was very interesting discussion given the coyote incidents that we've had earlier in the city. The presentation was videotaped and should be available online and on Kirkland TV beginning sometime next week. So highly recommended on the things that we need to do moving forward to prevent future coyote and wildlife incidents. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kloba, Ms. Marcioni, and myself attended the Sound Cities networking dinner. I think I'm not missing any. Congresswoman Del Benny was the speaker. She gave some very well-received remarks about depoliticizing our jobs. And it was very, very lovely. And it was a nice event at Snoqualmie at the golf course there. So, and very well attended. I must say, Sound Cities is sort of becoming bigger and better all the time, I think, in their influence and their...
Particularly when they go to Snoqualmie.
Well, it's hard to beat that location. But what's really hard to beat is our 4th of July celebration. And I know we've all said it, but what you've done is outstanding, and you make our town so special. And thank you so much. It's an amazing accomplishment. It takes leadership, passion, inspiration, and you're just, you got it all, lady. We love you. Thank you.
Now, could we be done so I didn't go to bed?
Well, funny you should say that. Because the next item on our agenda is the city manager's report and calendar update. Ms. Beard.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple real quick things. You received an email from City Attorney Kevin Raymond regarding the 520 demolition. I just wanted to make sure that that satisfied your questions. If you want any other additional information, let us know about that.
It was a well-constructed email. Thank you, sir. Questions or comments? Mr. Asher.
Is it okay if we forward this out to Representative Cooter, who had a letter in the paper today?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And on the calendar update, yes. We're asking council if they would like to cancel your December 1st and 3rd Tuesday meetings in December and meet just once in December. That would be on December 13th.
Yes, please.
That sounds like a...
okay with that. Mr. Nixon.
Since we seem to have done that always forever, could we just consider an amendment to the rules that makes that the standard practice so we don't even have to do the cancellation and that kind of thing?
It's considered a special meeting. I think that it sort of depends when the meeting falls on when we can get the all of
property
the
tax.
Year-end budget, CIP, property tax. So it sort of depends. It doesn't always work.
Oh, okay.
For the second Tuesday. So I guess that's...
It was worth a shot.
Yeah, it was worth a try. It's been a practice, but it hasn't always been. Yeah. And that's all I have. Any other updates to the calendar?
Mr. Asher.
Yes, I would like to take up as the spokesperson talk tonight, Initiative 735. Mm-hmm. I think that's worth bringing up, particularly in light of the history that we have with that issue.
How would we do that? Would we just bring it back to
the There's a standard way of bringing up initiatives with a public hearing, both sides.
Yeah. Are we okay with that?
Yeah. So you're looking for a resolution?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Arnold.
Councilmember Asher, might I suggest that we leave it flexible on when we look at this? Because there may be other issues we want to discuss, and I think it would be better to look at it in the September-October time frame versus the July-August time frame, given when people pay attention to November election issues.
Whatever. I'm just concerned that there's going to be a rush, it looks like, as we come closer. I have no problem just whenever we can calendar.
As long as we get it on.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Any other calendar updates?
Well, if I might, yes. I'm not sure of a better time to pick it up. I think what we talked about earlier about the costs of low impact development, the cost, the things that we're doing, I would like to see us approach a communication strategy on our fiscal efficiency, for lack of a better term. It doesn't poll well that people understand how well we do with funds, but I think we have a story to tell. I think that there is particularly a story to tell with 1% increase in property tax per year and things that don't increase at 1% per year. So how we do that, what processes we use, whether we it's an internal staff thing, whether it's consultants, I don't know. But I think that we need to improve our communications for our what I would consider a pretty efficient, fiscally efficient operation, and communicating that to the people that pay for what we do.
I agree with you, Ms. Sweet.
And I agree as well. I wonder, though, I think we do it. I think our cost of government, I think we've done it. I think maybe what you're suggesting is a new spin.
How we get through.
And that the LID process gives us perhaps an opportunity to to do that.
Yeah.
Do you think this is part of the, I know we have a placeholder for some communications work.
That's
in
what
the
I was
budget.
Suggest.
So maybe that's a part of that project, do you think?
Okay. You know, we have a big process coming up. It's called the budget. And all of these things are going to be taken up, the low-impact development, both the capital and maintenance needs. It's going to be at the forefront, I think, of our budget decisions and our ability to highlight and, you know, how we use alternative ways of dealing with things and complying with things and, you know, being conscientious about it. I think we can highlight that in the budget process and look for some, maybe some different ways of getting that out other than city updates, staff memos, public hearings, so we can work on that.
I'm trying to express it now because I think it may involve some expenditure of money before we get deep into the budget process on what might be effective, rather than putting in the budget process to find out what might be effective next year. I have an itch, and I'm looking for a way of scratching it, and I could use some help.
And we have a new communications program manager who's looking for just this kind of thing to work on, and I think she would find that really interesting. And we are going to be looking for some communication help about, you know, what is effective, how do we reach people today. What are the most effective and least effective ways of doing that? So we can put that all together.
And there are firms that are very, very good at doing that around in our region. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments for calendar update? And that's the end of your report, Marilyn?
No.
Thank you very much. It is before 10 p.m., so we have an additional items from the audience period. I don't see any items. Any audience might want to comment to us. Darn it. Another missed opportunity. So I'm going to declare that items from the audience period is closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much for a lot of work and a very short amount of time. Thank you.